Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Robert Forman, the founder and director of the Forge Institute for Spirituality and Social Change. Now, Bob and I are going to continue our discussion of relationships and emotional intimacy, whether in friendships, traditional relationships. We are going to talk about how you discover, with an open heart, the mystery, surprise, and depth of a soul-to-soul relationship with another person. And we're going to talk about vulnerability and trust and listening and continue to explore what is really a rich topic that can only be explored over multiple programs. Now, Bob is, he has quite the fascinating background for those of you new to these programs. His 39-year journey of personal spiritual enlightenment is expressed in his highly acclaimed memoir, Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, A Journey of Discovery, Snow, and Jazz in the Soul. And Bob also approaches spirituality in a very heartfelt way while being a professor of comparative religions with 20 years experience in that domain. He's the author of several books in that domain, very well respected in the area of studying mysticism. He is the co-founder of the Journal on Consciousness Studies, and his background is also reflected in these discussions. And Bob also offers one-on-one assistance through his spiritual counseling. He has a couple websites, a new one coming online. Today we're going to be talking about Bob's new Soul Jazz program that's being introduced this fall. That is available on souljazzonline.com. Also, enlightenmentain't.com is another website of Bob's. So I am so happy here to welcome back on the show Bob Forman. Hello, Bob.
Hi.
I'm struggling to make contact with you.
We are having technical difficulties, as they say in India.
Yeah. It's hard for me to tell. I'm going to do a couple of technical things here while we're talking to see if we can fix this, make sure people can hear. With that said, we can hear you. I hear you very clearly. Usually it's
you can hear me one way or the other. You can hear me, but you're kind of breaking up here. I'm going to call you from another line, see if this one works better.
Okay, we'll try that, and I can call in too. So we're just going to do a little experimentation here.
Radio
okay,
world,
I'm
can
not
you hear
seeing
me now?
That other line. Or is this the other
Susan,
line, Bob?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Okay. Looks like we're having phone problems again today. So I'm going to see what we can do. I'm going to see if I can play
can
a song.
Hear?
I can't
Susan,
hear you,
can
Bob.
You, hear me? You
okay.
cannot. Okay. I'm going to try from the other line. Okay,
it looks like we're having some phone problems again today, folks. So I'm going to go ahead and just play a song and see what we can do with them.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, finally. Okay, I was starting to play a song, but I'll let that go since we seem to have connected. Yeah, there have been some issues with the phones. Not sure what's going on. We've got to keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
But it's we're pushing the limits of the technology, I guess.
Apparently.
I don't know. But anyway, it's good to connect with you again. Maybe this is symbolic of what can happen when at an emotional level we're connecting with other people. There can be,
you know, I think it
false
is.
Starts.
I mean,
yeah.
All kidding aside, I think it actually is, because
it is.
In any relationship, in any connection, if you're doing it in the real world, there are real world issues that come up. Things don't work. Your relationship doesn't go the way you fantasize or imagine. And that's really the challenge of making contact with another human being. You make a contact with another human being in the face of your mutual imperfections and in the face of the difficulties of making those connections.
Yes. Yes. You know, one of the areas I was hoping to talk to you about right at the outset here, because I don't know if we've explored it at enough depth, is listening. Is we've talked a lot about sharing and trusting and also listening to cues to a point, but I would really like to explore more deeply what it is we can do to really be in a space of true support and truly listening to another person at a soul level.
All right, now, Susan, I just missed the middle of that sentence. Would you mind repeating yourself?
You know what? I'm going to call in on another line, and we'll see if that's any better. So just
okay.
So you can hear me, that might help. But
that
hold
would
on
definitely
a
help here.
Yeah. Yeah, because I hear you. But, again, we're having some phone issues, so we'll have to work
okay.
through them.
But
so
I'll
hold
on
a
line.
Sec. Yeah, stay on this line. This is a good line for you. Okay, Bob, you won't hear me quite as well because this is my cell, but can you hear me okay?
I can, yes. This is fine.
Okay, let's stay with this then.
And then you asked something about listening and making contact in that way, but can you repeat your question? I really
forget
what you're saying.
Yes, definitely. My question is, what can we really do to be in that space of truly being there for another person? I mean, I feel that this in itself is a developed skill. It's actually an area I need to work on.
Susan, if you can hear me, I cannot hear you.
And that's why I'm personally invested in hearing the answer. And I think all of us want to work on this if we truly are wanting to be in a soul-to-soul conversation with a person. What can we do to listen?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to say I missed about half that again, but I think I know.
Oh,
can you hear me? Let me just start, and we'll see if the technology will go with us here.
Yeah, we'll hope for the best.
I think it's very easy in relationship to imagine that you know what the other person is saying. It's very easy to assume that they feel what you feel, they think as you think, they are what you are, in effect. And I think the hard part of listening is to drop your expectations about what they're saying, to drop your understanding about what they should be saying, and rather to kind of open up in a way that's creative and new to what they're saying. I remember, for example, a conversation a few times ago between you and I, when you started to describe your own life story, and I must say I was very surprised. It was so unlike my own. I sort of had expected you to go to a place that I myself might have gone to. But the act of listening means that you're willing to let go of your own assumptions, let go of your own expectations, and to really hear another person for what they are. It's an act of courage, listening, because if you really listen to another person and allow their difference to be real, you are in effect sacrificing your own way of thinking about things, your own way of feeling, and entering into a way of feeling that may be very alien to you or certainly might be a little uncomfortable to you. And so the act of listening, I think, is an act of courage. It's an act of letting go of your own system, letting go of your own assumptions, and entering into the other.
Yeah, there we go.
How much of that did you miss?
I got most of it except for the very, very end. This is so highly symbolic. Not even a joke. It's actually really symbolic in a way. But what I did get, and I know that I have done this, it's that projecting of oneself onto somebody else is that, you know, we bring to this world our own experiences, our own context of experiences. And it seems like the more we expose ourselves, even through reading, I mean, here's another question. You know, I've actually opened up more to reading things over again. I'm starting to explore a lot of things in my own life. And by listening to these voices that are out there, I wonder if that then helps me to project less of myself onto the voice of another person, even in real life, you know, that assumption we say, those assumptions we make.
Yeah, and I think it's much more fun. It's much more joyous to listen to another person and be surprised, to listen to another person and kind of feel into a mystery. I think it's a whole lot more interesting than sort of entering into a conversation or entering into a relationship with another person where they're just like you. But it does take a lot of courage to let your own stuff go, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It does. And it takes not only courage, but, you know, we have to let go some of our ego as well. I mean, because we have a tendency to want to talk within our own context sometimes and about ourselves. And we need to let that go and because genuinely, deeply, we really do want to listen.
Yeah, in the soul jazz work, you mentioned at the outset that we've got a new website just opened up, and it's called Soul Jazz Online. And it's about a new program called Soul Jazz, which I really am thrilled to talk about a little bit. In the soul jazz work, one of the early exercises that we lead people through is we have one person talking about some issue that's alive for them, something that's going on for them, and we encourage the listener to say nothing while they're listening. And it's a profoundly shifting sort of experience for most people of just really being listened to. Most of the time when you're talking to somebody and you're hearing them kind of go off on their own thing or they're preparing what they're going to say, there's a kind of disconnect. But if the other person is simply there without speaking, just understanding, and if they don't understand, saying something like, "Can you explain that? I don't understand," as opposed to, and you know, kind of giving you their own stuff, it's an amazingly rich experience to just be heard and be listened to. And it's something that I find myself doing. For example, with you, when you're talking, in the past, I think I would have been, you know, uh-huh, and okay, and whatnot. And I would have been, you know, saying to you, yes, I have the same experience or whatnot. But to really be listening quietly and paying really full attention is such a gift to the other person, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, I'll tell you something about this show, Bob, and it's a journey that I've had, is a lot of times I'm finding, I've even been criticized. I'll tell you this. I have been criticized by experienced radio hosts or people who've done radio, that I talk too much. You know, you interject your own thoughts too much. You need to interview the person. And sometimes I don't even ask a question. And that can really disconcert some people who do a lot of interviews, because I guess they're used to my just asking questions. And I just, no matter how hard I try, Bob, and I don't even want to necessarily try, but I have to adapt. This is part of listening, by the way. I have to adapt to the people who come on the show, because if they're not used to the kind of show, even if I tell them this is a discussion more than anything, then I'm not going to have an effective conversation with them. So, and I sense that this carries over to other things is, you know, how we so have to read the other person's expectations of the situation, even on this show, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, be aware, Susan. I missed a little of what you said earlier in that, but let me respond to what I think I hear you pointing at, which is that you know, as you listen and as you enter into the other person, I think you really are making a connection. You really kind of pay attention to what the other person is doing. And this might sound just slightly inconsistent with what I said before about not going to your own stuff. I find in really good listening, there's both a really rich centering in on the other person, but there's also a kind of entering into a controlled, now this can sound kind of weird, but I'll explain it. There's entering into a kind of controlled fantasy as you're talking to the other one. You know, as I talk to somebody, if I'm really talking, I kind of drop into my own depths or drop into my own soul a little bit. And in that place, I'm both listening to them, but I'm also listening to what's wanting to be said through me.
There you are.
Are you hearing me?
I am now. I lost you again.
If you listen in from the level of depth or listen in from the level of soul, that you're both really centering in on what the other person is saying, but you're also, in a certain sense, listening for what wants to be said here through you. You're listening to your own kind of controlled fantasy life. You're listening to what is new, what is surprising. There's a kind of resonance that gets set up between you and the other person. And that, I think, is real listening. So real listening entails both really understanding what the other person is saying, not your own stuff, but also entering into a kind of space between the two of you, or a kind of space of your own depth in which the two of you are really resonating. And that's real listening for me.
Yes. What if you're in a situation, Bob, and if you can't hear me, please do say, because I'll repeat myself.
If I don't hear you, I don't think you're hearing me back. So what would you do?
I guess it's kind of a catch-22, isn't it?
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah, well, just an assurance to the audience that we're going to get to the bottom of what's going on technologically and see what we can do with future shows to ensure this doesn't happen. But,
great.
Yeah, I mean, it's essential. We can't have an effective conversation, obviously, if we can't hear each other. But the thing is, okay, now I lost my train of thought. But,
oh, dear. Now I can't hear you again.
What happens
if you enter into
a conversation with someone, and I've had this occur many times, where there seems to
hang
be
on,
a resonance.
Hang on, Susan.
Oh,
you're going to have
gosh.
To repeat all that. I did not hear a word. Did you hear me saying I couldn't hear you?
No, I couldn't hear you saying you couldn't hear me. Yeah, you know, what a fascinating thing having to do with listening, because there can be such, there can be gaps in what we really hear. That's the other thing. It's really true that we don't
always... Yeah, you really do have to pay attention on an ongoing way. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You do. I mean, even in real life, I mean, we don't always hear everything.
So going back to it, I had said something about listening from depth and responding through a kind of space that gets set up between the two of you. And you said, well, what if you're with somebody and that's all I got?
Okay, what if it stops resonating? What if you start to explore a little depth with someone and then, you know, it just really isn't working. And you know it. And you're thinking, you know, I'm not sure. I'm in a space of trust where I feel comfortable. Or, you know, what then? How, and, you know, how do we graciously, you know, step back? I mean, sometimes we need to do that. Or do how long do we attempt to find that depth?
You know, that's a hard question, and I don't know a clean answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, I mean, if I have somebody that I'm a very good friends with, like I'm thinking of a friend of mine out in Los Angeles right now, and this fellow and I have been very dear friends for a very long time, I can say to him without a question of doubt, I can say to him, I'm not catching what you're saying. And then he'll explain it back, and within, you know, within a couple of tries, I'll certainly get the gist of what he's trying to point to. But by going back and forth with him like that, that requires a great deal of trust. If it's somebody new and they're giving me some stuff that I'm really not catching and there's a kind of rhythm to it I'm not kind of fitting with, you know, you try once or twice and at some point you have to say to yourself, this just isn't going to work. This isn't working. As for how to get out of it, I don't know. That requires more tact than I believe I have. So, you know, you try to be polite, I guess. You know, you do what you can. But it's very frustrating when you know what real listening is or when you know what real contact is and you don't have contact. There's a kind of loss to it that I'm very aware of. You know, it's like, oh, there's a possibility here that I can smell, but I can't get into it. I always feel very sad about that. Like,
yeah.
I'm failing or there's something wrong with me for not being able to do it or, you know, it's a real loss to me that I can't make contact with this very cool person. But the truth of the matter is you can't make contact with everybody. I don't know anybody that can make contact with everyone.
Right. Yeah, there can't. Go ahead. I was going to say there can be a kind of heartbreak to it sometimes.
Yeah.
But something with your friend, you know, here's something important, is that we all have situations where we grow and we change in life. And but that doesn't mean, like I have some friends who I've had forever, and one way or another, I will find a way to connect to those people at the level that they're willing to engage with me. You know, these people may not understand.
I'm going to have to, Susan, I'm going to
all
have
right,
to
I'm going to switch to the other phone.
I caught the beginning, the very beginning of that, and then I missed
okay.
the middle part. So just
all
do
right,
it again.
Let me switch again. And if we still have problems, we may have to disconnect. I mean, if it's just impossible to have a conversation, we'll
yeah,
see
I
what
think,
happens.
I would not subject your listeners to this. I think this is a pity. That,
exactly.
It really has to be resolved. And if, you know, if you have to skip a show,
yeah,
I'm happy to come on again and do it right next time.
Right. Let's try one more time on the other line, because I'm actually seeing it come through a little better over there. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, we're going to try this line for a while, see what
okay,
happens.
Okay, but let's say
if
this breaks off, if it breaks off again,
if,
we'll just have
yeah,
to
we won't,
try again.
Yeah, we won't continue. We'll just... We'll find another way, but yeah, and I'll certainly check into what is going on. So in any case, I was talking about.
You had said something about my friend and making contact with my friend. And...
Yeah. You know, there are some friends, Bob, that are really old friends, and even if we get into a space where we've grown. Maybe spiritually, we've grown apart. I mean, people grow in different ways in life. There's a commitment to the friendship itself such that we just find a way to connect where we can connect. And, you know, it does require, it requires a kind of tolerance, too, in a way. Like, I have friends who, you know, I connect with quite a few people still who are evangelical Christians. They're very into the end times. They're into a lot of things, and that I'm not really into anymore. And somehow, because of the value of the connection itself, I find a way to connect with them.
Yeah, there's a kind of trust built up that you're willing to keep going with this person or these people.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that trust to begin with, at some level you just feel like, I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to get to this person well enough. But you're describing a very real problem. It's like, you know, you continue to grow and the other person continues to grow in their way, and sometimes you do just grow apart. It takes a great deal. I mean, when I think back to my friends that I had in kindergarten and high school, you know, it's very few of them that I can really talk with at this point. There's very few of them that I can have that kind of contact with. And it is a loss of our society. I think there's a loss of, you know, continuity. We don't live in the same place anymore. We don't do the same kinds of things. We don't have the same kind of concerns. And there's a real loss in our society because of that. But I think that's sort of the challenge that we all face in developing soulfulness with one another is, how do you overcome those differences, and how much can you create connection and intimacy? So this is a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also of relatives. I mean, there are going to be cases where you are very invested, unless you want to alienate, you know, people in your family, which you can. Sometimes people will grow apart. But I think that many of us in a space of true love and compassion for those in our family, we really want to connect still deeply with those people, even if we're on different paths.
Yeah, and this leads me into something else that you and I have talked about, and it's I don't quite know how to overcome it. The act of listening, if I'm to really listen to another, the act of listening requires that the other person tells me something that's true or tells me something that's quite real for them. And often I'm really eager to enter into something with somebody else, and they seem like a really wonderful person, or the connection seems really sweet. And then the other person gives me something that's kind of formulaic or ego-bound. You know, they give me their rap, as I put it. They give me their, you know, their self-presentation, or what Jung called their persona. And when somebody gives you a persona, you can't really do much with it unless they're willing to keep going. You know, they kind of present and, you know, oh, I'm so happy and everything is wonderful. And I'm interested in making contact with somebody where things are both good and bad. And if somebody can't go to where they're working at something, where they're kind of struggling, then all the listening in the world is not going to help me get to it. So the act of making contact, the act of listening, is a mutual act. It requires a kind of courage on the side of both participants. The courage on the side of the listener to be willing to go to where this other person is, but it also, to make real contact, it requires courage on the part of the speaker to make themselves a little more vulnerable, to reveal what's actually going on with them. And if either partner can't do it, then the act of the connection really doesn't come. And that always breaks my heart when that happens.
Yes. Oh, by the way, I'm hearing you much better. I hope you're hearing me.
I'm hearing you pretty well, but you know, I'm losing pieces of words. Whole paragraphs, so that's better.
Well, we'll keep going for now, but if you feel that it gets to the point we need to stop, I'll honor that. You know, there's another aspect of this that I was just thinking about as you were saying that, is that when people are really sharing honestly and exploring, you are going to hear from them some degree of their figuring out their own authentic selves. I mean, you will feel reflected their moods. You know, they could have been going through some kind of challenging time. And there's a kind of experience I've had where you have to look below the surface. I mean, because you might present yourself in a certain way and then say later, oh, you know, I was so down. I was so wrapped up in this. And I don't even know how much of what I just said is completely real. It's completely what I feel now. You see what I mean? It can shift so much, and that we need to be aware of that as well. And
yeah.
We need to be able to be honest with each other when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that, I mean, what you've done is kind of define it, which is, if somebody is going to be honest with me or real with me, I assume that they're always going to be kind of figuring out what it is that they do feel, figuring out what it is they do mean right now. Because we don't know. It's not like we're walking around with clearly defined sentences saying, you know, today I am happy, today I'm sad. That's not the way life works. So if I'm going to make contact with another person, it's almost always going to be framed in a, well, I don't know how to say this exactly. Or it's going to be framed by, I really don't know quite what I'm feeling here, but, you know, there's a kind of acknowledgement of the frailty of language and the inability to say it. And I think that that's a mark of intimacy. It's a mark of honesty. So that it's almost always that people are going to be somewhat incoherent, somewhat inconsistent, not exactly, you know, if somebody says, you know, if I say to somebody, hey, how you doing? And they say, oh, great. You know, and then they kind of pretend that everything in their life is just great. At some level, I want to say, it's bullshit. You know, that's not the case. You know, we really know your life is not perfect. And we all can see that, you know, your marriage is not perfect, and we all can see that your, you know, whatever, your life is not perfect. And yet people want to kind of maintain a kind of image of themselves. And that image is kind of thin. It doesn't have the kind of richness that a real life has. So I think you're really pointing to something that's a good marker of intimacy, certainly a marker of honesty.
Yes. And, you know, just reflecting on this some more is, it can be almost like a kind of dance with ourselves in a way where sometimes we back out of it too far. Have you had that happen where someone will really share something vulnerable and then they're like, oh my gosh, I shared that. And then they start glossing over. I've had this happen to me recently. But that's not the truth either. That's that insecure part which says to yourself, oh my, you know, I'm not sure, maybe I went too far of being too vulnerable, and then we pull back too far. And so then somehow we have to find that place of adjustment, of even honestly saying that, oh, you know, I pulled back too far, and now I want to go forward again and find that
absolutely.
Space.
You know, the program that we have is called Soul Jazz. And again, the website is called souljazzonline.com. And in Soul Jazz, one of the reasons we call it Soul Jazz is that when two people get to going, it very much is like a jazz improv or like a dance. So that one person shares at a certain depth and the other person kind of hits that same depth, and then the other person shares at an even deeper level, and then the second person goes to that level. And there's a kind of back and forthness. Whereas if somebody comes to me and they want to just start telling me everything about their lives and everything about their mother and everything about their, you know, their gout or whatever it is that's going on in their life, you know, at some level you want to say, this is a little too much sharing, I'm really not ready for this. So there's a kind of a dance that we take on, but both parties have to be sensitive to where the other party is. There's a kind of mutual dropping down, a mutual sense of discovery. And when it works, when it really is mutual, when it's both parties sharing, it's just wonderful. But when one person is, I think you've called it oversharing in the past, you know, when one person is oversharing, that gets a little old. It gets to be, uh-oh, I don't know if I want to go here with this person. Are they, you know, and so you start to be thinking about, is their neurosis going to take over my life? Is their fear going to be, you know, too much? And it's almost funny, you know, it's almost laughable to see it. But I love doing this, but when somebody overshares with me, I'm a little reticent to go very far. It's like, uh-oh, it's a bit much for me, you know. And so there really is a kind of dance that goes on, or a jazz that we're playing.
Yes, yes. And And it does take adjustments. Now I have a question about soul jazz specifically, because I really want to understand more about what you're creating here. How do you foster, you know, people coming in to the program will be sharing in the midst of other people that they don't know.
Yeah.
How do you help people become comfortable with that level of sharing in the midst of those that, you know, they don't know these people necessarily?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, that is part of the challenge, and you have to make
yes.
it safe for people. You know,
yes.
it's like if somebody's going to share something, my main concern, if I'm going to share something with you, my main concern is this going to get back to the person that I'm talking about or to, you know, I had a very complicated relationship with my mother. Well, my sister's still alive, and I wonder, is my sister going to hear that? You know, that's a little of concern to me. I have a complicated relationship with my wife, we all do, and you know, so if I'm going to share something about her, I want it to be kept private. I want to know that the person I'm kind of working around, the issue I'm working with, is not going to get back to that person. So you really do need to sort of protect confidentiality. You want to know that the other person is not going to judge you. So you sort of set that up in the beginning, as you set up, is it really going to be safe? What's it going to take for this to be safe? But
right.
a second thing is that I actually find that it's easier to share intimately with strangers if the context is right. If I'm sharing
yes.
with my brother, if I'm sharing with my brother-in-law, you know, that I'm going to have to live with that sharing for the rest of my life. If I share with somebody I don't know, it's actually in a certain sense easier because it's not going to get back to somebody I have to live with all the time. And so I find that bringing people together to share and to practice sharing and to practice becoming more honest with oneself and with other people, I think it's a kind of, it's a little like being in school, you know, that you get to do this, you do it on a kind of practice level. And then when it comes time to sharing with your real mom or sharing with your sister or sharing with your lover, you know, that's a little more difficult. I often say that what we're doing here in the Soul Jazz program is like kindergarten. Sharing with your spouse is like graduate school. It's much more difficult.
Yeah.
It's much more difficult to get through the layers of complexity and the layers of meaning that are already built up between the two of you. And I think that sharing with strangers actually has a real benefit to it.
Yeah.
We're also working with doing this online. That's a whole other set of questions. How do you get someone to share fairly intimately when they can't even see their body language? When they, you know, we have a
True.
Program that allows people to see one another, but it's not the same as being in the same room. So all of these are really good questions.
And you'll be dealing with technology too, I'm afraid, because
all
of, you know, we're doing well now, it seems, but you know, just about every technological solution, especially if it includes video, I mean, it's like us today. I mean, we're working with it, and it's going okay. And I guess it'll be like that. Now, how big are these groups, Bob? How big do you anticipate these groups being where people are sharing?
Well, we're having a beta test with a group that should be between 10 and 15. That seems like a nice place to start.
Yeah.
I could see the groups getting as large as about 30. The thing about the technology that we have is that it allows us to break people up. Like we can do dialogue groups of two or three. So if we had even 50 people on a phone call at the same time, we would just break them up into 25 little groups of two for them to do work together. I think 50 feels a little too big, but certainly 30 would be manageable. I expect that'll be about the size that we're doing this.
Now, I have a question that actually came from a friend of mine when I was describing this as best I could, this soul jazz group.
Yes.
He said, oh, well, it's a support group, you know, because just about everybody, once you get to a certain age, it seems, we've all been in a support group, or many of us have, at one point or another, you know, where you're sharing with strangers. And then we cast certain assumptions on what that experience is like. So there's a question for you. How does this go beyond, or maybe enhance upon, what you might have in a a quote support group, which is a
little... You know, at some level, I mean, that's a very interesting phrase, and I love the idea of a support group. In other words, it's supportive, and we can sort of, you know, kind of hold our hand. But I regard this, the process that we're developing here, as more of a challenge group than a support group. In other words, can we challenge each other to keep going? I think to develop soul, and this is part of the theme of the thing, to develop soul means that you're developing your life in such a way that you're going to someplace new, that it makes you feel a little vulnerable and a little awkward because you're going to someplace you've never really been before. Like you were describing before, when you start to share with somebody and you assume you know what they're talking about, but you really don't. I think soul work is like that. It always goes to something that's a little surprising. So that the challenge of the work of developing soul is, can you allow yourself to keep going? And so the group's job is to encourage you, and your dialogue partner's jobs are to encourage you to be discovering something that you've really never articulated before and discovering things that are new. So, yeah, it's a support group in the sense that everybody's encouraging each other to go to new places. But it's not like, I don't know, I find support groups are, you know, it's like, yes, you're hurting, you know, yes, you have, I don't know, you know, you have heart disease, you have cancer, yes, your son is a jerk. You know, and so that's supportive in the sense that, oh, yes, we've all been there together. But I think more interesting is, can you say to your friends, can you say to other people in a group, you know, I have a heart attack, or I had a heart attack, or I have cancer. Now, where can I go that's even deeper than this? You know, what's it really setting off in me? What am I learning here? What's new? What can I discover about my life? What can I create here that's new in my life? And so is that supportive? Yeah, it's a support group, but I think much more interesting is that can I keep challenging myself to go to some place that's surprising and vulnerable making and new? That's where it gets delicious.
Yes, and as you're describing this, I'm realizing, you know, support groups, as you said, they tend to be focused in an area. We all have cancer, or we all, you know, are dealing with some issue, whereas the beauty of what you're creating here is the diversity. In the same way that, like when you said that I shared about some of my life, you were surprised. You know, there were some things that you didn't expect or whatever. I mean, that's exactly it. Is that we're going to, you know, it's a reflection of so many different experiences, and then you discover things in yourself that way, that it may be looking at it in a new way because you just never really thought about the type of experience that somebody else may be having. I guess I'm trying to get at this as best I can, kind of awkwardly.
Yeah, I'm
going
to have
really
to ask you to repeat that. I missed the middle of that. So you discover something about yourself and dot, dot, dot.
Okay. Basically, that the beauty of the depth of this program is that you discover things about yourself through the diversity of other experiences. It's not like a support group where everybody's focused on a topic. Everybody is, you know, it's much wider and more open than that. That's the best way I can explain.
Yeah, it's much more open. Right, and much more open. Again, you know, the way we understand soulfulness is soul is always on the edge of newness. It's always on the edge of what you don't yet know. And I think we're all discovering something all the time, but most of us kind of don't pay attention to where things are new and fresh. So the idea of developing real intimacy or the idea of developing real connection means that you're really willing to kind of explore aloud together in what is new. That's why it becomes what we call soulful. So that you know, okay, so you've got cancer, or you've got heart disease, or your son has got ADD. Okay, great. Now where do you want to go? You know, it's like, what can we discover now about life and death and our fears of incompetence or our fears of competence? Or, you know, it's like, where else can we go? What more can we say about life? And that's where it gets to be new. So, yeah, it's much more open-ended than any kind of support group I've ever encountered. It's much more discovery-oriented and connection-oriented. And again, I think real listening, coming back to your theme of the beginning here, I think real listening is part of the process of encouraging somebody to come out. Because when I really hear you and I really am listening to what's going on for you, it's a kind of a gift. It's a kind of an invitation to keep discovering what you're doing in your own life and who you are. So, you know, can we call that supportive? Absolutely. Can we call it a support group? I don't think so. But I do think that it's a kind of welcoming process. It's a kind of invitational process.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I would imagine it is, you know, you really do journey into yourself as well, even as you're sharing, because I have found when
Absolutely.
I share certain
yeah.
things with people, I've had this habit where I'll say something that gets deeper and deeper, and I'll say, well, you know, that's not exactly it. That's not it. Or this is it. Or this is it. And actually, it's
right.
all it is actually the point to some degree.
Yeah.
But you just keep spiraling deeper
Inward.
And deeper and deeper
yeah.
into figuring out varying degrees of it. And it's,
yes.
it's a tremendous experience
and
for yourself.
When you do that, when you do that, one of the things I'm finding very exciting is that, well, let me back up a notch. I learned how to make real contact with people about 15 years ago. And before that time, I think I was pretty well cut off from folks. And about 15, maybe 20 years ago, what year is this, 13? Yeah, almost 20 years ago, I start to make that kind of contact with people. And I find that over the years since that time, it's the only thing I want to do. But once you start doing it with somebody, it kind of opens up another relationship. And so that my interest now is in fostering this ability in more and more people. And it's a very selfish interest. I just like talking to people at some depth. So the more people I can invite to learn how to make real contact with themselves and to learn how to connect with me and with other people, the more my world expands and the more fun I get to have, because it's like, this is the cool stuff, talking to people about what really goes on. And
yes.
so I find that my excitement comes because I get to find more people that can play with me, and I get to play with other people and people that find me. And that's really where life gets to be juicy as hell, you know. And so that I think that developing soulfulness with other people is about the most fun we get to have as human beings.
Yes, yes. Mm. And you know, the irony of that is you're describing why I enjoy this show. I mean, there's only so far I can go in a given episode with people, but I love this show because personally it's
very
gratifying.
But you have people like me back over and over and over again.
Yeah.
After a while, you get to actually understand
each other.
That's
true, as long as we can hear each other. But no, it's true. I mean, and I find that more and more I connect to people outside the show. You know, I mean,
Absolutely.
Not always, but there can be at least some degree of interaction, and it really enriches the more connections that we have. You know, here we have a case of a public forum, which is a bit different, but it doesn't matter. There's still very real connections occurring here, and one of the reasons I keep going with it is because, yes, it's like you, to use your, I love this word that keeps showing up, delicious. It really is. It's tremendously personally gratifying to have these conversations, and so, you know, it gives back to everyone in a sense. Are you there?
I missed that. Do it again.
Oh, dear. Well, rest assured, those of you listening to the live show, I appreciate your patience. If you're listening to the podcast, I will probably edit this comment out. I will be editing this podcast, just so you know, so that it's easier for people to listen to. So if you're listening to the live show and you want to hear this in a more coherent way, I'll see if I can put it together so that I'll have to see what made it into the broadcast. But again, you know, rest assured, audience, we're going to get to the bottom of what's going on with the phones, because it's important that these work well. So anyway, as we enter into our last 10 minutes, assuming we can still hear each other, there was another area on your Soul Jazz site, which I'm kind of paraphrasing from memory, had something to do with taking a stand, you know, having the courage to take a stand, I think, was what I saw. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit more, Bob. What is it that you're exploring there?
Susan.
Yes?
Susan. All right. The only part I heard of that whole introduction or the whole question was, there's another part on your Soul Jazz site that...
All right. You know, I wonder if you can hear me now. Maybe we'll draw this particular show to a close a little early, because we're having trouble again, and there's nothing I can do to fix it.
Well, I was interested in what you were saying. Just ask the question again.
All right, I'll ask again.
If I can't hear you a second time, we'll hang it up.
Okay. All right. The aspect of Soul Jazz that has to do with taking a stand. I thought I saw that on one of the slides. I wonder if you could talk about that a little more, about personally taking a stand for things, if I'm remembering the terminology correctly.
That's right. It's really about being self-responsible in your own life. Most of us, a surprising amount of the time, kind of go along and mostly or many times consider ourselves kind of a victim of our circumstances, consider ourselves not really in charge of our own life, but kind of responding to things. And part of, I think, what it means to be a real grown-up is to be able to take a stand, that is to say, say to yourself, for example, I am a strong human being. And most of us kind of consider, well, many of us kind of consider ourselves at some level weak. Can we actually be strong? Well, what does it take to be strong? It takes the willingness to recognize when you're not being that way, when you're not being strong, and then to enact, to do something about taking that on. Or I have come to see myself as a musician, and part of seeing myself as a musician is that I practice my guitar every single day. And that's my commitment to myself, to actually do that. And so taking a stand, it's not like I will take a stand for justice. Well, it might be.
Right.
I will take a stand for justice, but rather taking responsibility for who you're being in the world. You know, are you being...
Yes.
Weak? Are you being a musician? Are you being a good husband? Are you being a good mother? Are you being a good friend? I mean, what does it take to be these things? So that, for example, in one relationship I have with a very dear friend, you know, we have kind of taken one another on and said to one another, you know, I want to be able to articulate with you what it is that I'm grateful for. And so we have just begun to say to one another, and as part of our monthly conversation, we've begun to say to one another, I'm grateful for blah, blah, blah this month. And it's a way to become more self-responsible. It's a way to start to live what you talk. And it sounds a little scary to most of us. Most of us think, oh my God, taking a stand, I have to be responsible to, you know, to some sergeant here. But it's not that at all. It's rather being responsible to yourself and your own values and what you actually think. And it's had very powerful effect on some folks. And I think it's a very good tool, is not the right word, but it's a very good place to stand. It's a very good attitude towards one's own life. So I find it a very helpful tool. It's not the only thing we teach in Soul Jazz, but it's a piece of it. Soulfulness means that you start to recognize that you are in your own life, you are in relationship to yourself, you're in relationship to other people, and it's starting to take responsibility for being in relationship and how you're being with that other person and being in your life. So it's a very good practice. So again, just to give one more plug here, The website is called Soul Jazz Online, Soul Jazz Online. And we are offering our first beta test at the end of this month that you know about, Susan.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'd love to have more people involved because it gives me a chance to get to know some other people at some depth. So it's the coolest thing I know.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something very unique. I haven't really seen it elsewhere because it's not a support group, as you say. It's much more. This is a very fascinating experiment that you're undertaking in a way. I mean,
yeah,
it'll be interesting
I would want to distinguish it from quite a number of things. First of all, it's not spiritual work. Spiritual work,
yes.
In a certain sense, you close your eyes and it kind of pulls you out of your life. And a lot of us have been doing some spiritual work and discovering, hey, I want to be in my life a little more, and I'm not so happy in my life. So it's not spiritual work exactly. It's not psychological work exactly, because in psychological work, you're dealing with problems. In soul work, sometimes it's problems, sometimes it's wonderful things that are going on. It's rather whatever is developing. I like to say that psychological work gets you to go. Soul work is where you go from go. So is that clear?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah. And nor is it a support group. A support group is like we're all sort of holding each other's hand and kind of going over, you know, what this particular problem is. Soul work is discovering what's new about your life. So, yes, it's supportive, but no, it's not a support group. So it's kind of all of the above and none of the above. You know, soul is always unique. So, yeah, I'm happy to accept unique.
Yeah. Well, and you know, just responding a little in the last couple minutes we have, is even to what you said about how to define taking a stand, so many of us really are trying to explore what is it that I really believe, and not just in a dogmatic way. I mean in a soulful, heart-based way. You know, how do I really view this? How do I really view this experience that I had or this concept? And it does appear to be something that, you know, one can enter into that space with what you're creating here. So I will say, as we're coming to the end here of a rather interesting show, thank you for being here again. And I'll take a look at the podcast. It may be a lot of times the podcast has more integrity than the live show, I found, and so it doesn't require much work, and sometimes just letting it be is the way to go. So I'll make a decision on that so the people who are listening will know. But a lot of times, like when I couldn't hear you, the audience could hear you and things like that, and so it actually kind of works better. But in any case, thanks again for being here again.
Yes, and I look forward to some more. I look forward to some more, and our technology, I'm sure you'll get it under control, and next time we'll actually be able to hear as well as listen to it.
Yeah, one way or another, so that we can more effectively connect, because it can be a little distracting when the technology isn't working quite right.
Indeed.
Of course, I get my technologist inside of me, you know, starts responding to that. And so, you know, if you felt a little interference today, it's probably my inner technology person.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just to say that honestly. And you know what? That's part of engaging, is that we have conflicting things going on sometimes. And isn't that interesting how we find a way to engage anyway? So,
in the face of our technological difficulty, I want to thank you for doing what you're doing. And I want to thank you for having me on your show, and I look forward to some more.
Yeah, and you're always welcome. I know the audience is developing a relationship with this series of shows and with you. I mean, that's what happens over time, Bob. And I know that we're all appreciative, and I'm personally appreciative of you being here. So thanks again, and I do look forward to next time and a much smoother time next time technologically. We'll get that worked out.
All right, Susan. Be well.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye.
You too. Okay, well, as we come to the end of the live show, I will just announce the next program coming up Monday, September 9th at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. I have Jonathan Womack coming on the program, And he is the winner of the Hollywood Book Festival Top Award for his book, A Cry for a Hero. And this will be a little bit of a different kind of show, although Jonathan is very spiritual in his approach to these topics. But the intent behind Monday's show is actually to reflect upon some things during the week of September 11th, because his book is very relevant to that, and was actually written before September 11th, 2001. And yet over this time, it continues to resonate with people. And the award that he just received is actually given for books that could be developed very effectively for movies or gaming or other applications. And so I know we'll have a really interesting talk. That is Monday, September 9th at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And please do visit frontierbeyondfear.com, where you can learn about all the upcoming shows. I'm very slowly enhancing that site when it comes to technology. It takes some time. One of these days, I'd love to put a major upgrade in, but at the very least, I really hope to get a calendar out there, because I actually have shows scheduled all the way into October now. I am so thankful to the many people coming the way of this show, and I'm thankful to the community around it. Very appreciative of everyone who is involved with this program. So thank you again, everyone, and I hope that today's discussion really will help you to ponder ways, reflect upon ways that we can more soulfully connect with others and what we can do to foster that. And I really am intrigued with what Bob will be doing with the Soul Jazz program. So thanks again for being here today.